The town may be kind of small, but these folks have big smiles and big hearts. And they know what it is to have simple fun down our way, where old-fashioned singing and homey gatherings make living mighty pleasant.
If we're talking about embarrassing music and...
Yeah, we are.
My mom took me to see U2 play.
That's not embarrassing.
Justin!
And I leave it out when I do things like this. And I guess Chris kind of just, with your help, gave courage to admit it.
Yeah.
The first step is the hardest.
Yeah.
All right, I'll admit it. I like Simon and Garfunkel.
There is no shame in that.
Of course there's not.
Game's rolling.
Welcome to Abandoned Albums, the documentary podcast where we take a closer look at some albums that may have been forgotten about over time, and some albums you might not even know existed. I'm your host, Keith R. Higgins, and joining me as always is the Ace of Spades, Rob Janicki. Hey, Rob, how are you?
Hey, Keith, how are you?
Well, you know, I'm okay, Rob. As you can probably tell from my voice, it's a little hoarse. And that's from staying up all night ripping bong hits and watching the new season of Stranger Things.
Teenagers aren't all delinquents. Only a few are involved in these criminal acts that we're all concerned about. If these teenagers, who represent all of the rest, have the courage to come here, then I think we should invite them to help us stamp out this vandalism.
Chicago is the home to many great rock bands and musicians, and you can now include the guys from Rookie among them. Their debut album is proof that good rock and roll, like good jeans and a good t-shirt, will never go out of fashion. After listening to Rookie and talking with Justin and Chris, both Rob and I found our faith in good old-fashioned rock and roll had been restored. Justin.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
I'm going to get something for my throat. I'll be right back.
How you doing, Justin?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Looks like you got some nice weather wherever you are.
It's hot. I'm on the south side of Chicago. The southwest side of Chicago, I guess. Hot today. It's 100 degrees. Or yesterday was 50 degrees.
That's the way weather's gone lately, right?
Yeah.
Oh, there's Chris. Chris is in the room. Hey, Chris.
Hello.
Hey, Chris.
What's up, Keith and Rob? What's going on?
Greetings. Thank you guys for taking the time to talk to us.
Yeah, thank you.
I love your fucking record.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How did Rookie come together? Let's start on the very basic one for folks that don't
know. So Joe Bardinaro and a couple friends organized the band, and then they played for about 6 months or a year, and then they had Justin and I join, and we came in and helped them make the first record. I knew Joe when he was definitely under 21, and I'm a little bit older than him, and he'd be around the studio, the Treehouse Records, and we'd hang out a little bit. I'd show him what I was working on, the other way around, and got to be friends.
That's something Rob said to me before you guys jumped on the call. You guys are young.
I'm 24.
I'm a little bit older than him.
The reason I brought it up, actually, it's interesting that guys your age are into, you know, that kind of sound. The music you play is a very, you know, classic rock sound, sort of, you know. I mean, basically, it's got a 70s sound to it, and you guys are in your early and mid-20s, so I think that's really cool. I mean, did you all bond over that kind of music?
Zoning into the 70s stuff was more of Joe, and me and Barrett, the engineer on the first record, and now the bass player, we kind of came around. Those universes met because we liked analog recording.
Did you actually record on tape when you recorded the record?
It was tape.
It was?
Yes. Before I joined, they had done 2 songs digitally, and then we went over to the tape. I've recorded digitally, but I've never released anything digitally. I think I've always my whole life analog. I don't think that will change. So I think it's kind of just, you know, that rock and roll stuff and that analog, you know, they're hand in hand, so... Justin, what do you like about the 70s rock?
I think that maybe a thread that ties the whole group together individually is that I'd imagine, and we've touched on this together privately, that we were kind of sitting at the lunch table in high school, kind of outside of any major group of friends, and I think all kind of fell in love. I don't know. I've seen before that it was written about us that we were stealing the records off our parents' shelves, and I don't know if that's necessarily the case, but I think what is the case is that we, one way or another, fell into a good group in high school that turned us on to the 60s and 70s kind of music. Chris has a great love for Phil Spector.
Wow.
Well, yeah. With a caveat.
I don't like his ways with the ladies, no.
We could do without the whole murder
thing. Yeah, I think so.
I don't care for the music.
When you're recording digitally, you almost feel like you can make as many mistakes as, you know, as you want, you know, because it's going to get fixed. You can always like make that better. But when you're recording on tape, do you feel more pressure when you do that? And does that, do you think that makes you play better?
There's the whole thing where you can get, you know, a little pent up and make the mistakes over and over and over again. Or you could, you know, get really diligent and do exactly what you need to do. But you do need to also, I think the biggest thing is that you have to put yourself in that room and actually perform. And that's the hardest thing. I think analog or digital, that's what all people are looking to hear anyways.
Yeah.
And
it helps capture the live sound too, I would think, right? Is that?
Oh, for sure.
Gives you a little bit more. Yeah.
I mean, all we want is to relate to people on human experience, any artist. And that's what they're looking for is they are looking for you to, you know, missed that hi-hat one time out of 8,000 times on a song or something. People learn to love that stuff.
Yeah. And if you listen to those early Clapton records from like the early to mid 70s, you can hear some bum notes there.
Of course.
And it adds a certain charm. And to your point, Chris, an honesty and connection to the artist that you're not going to, that I don't get as often these days.
What is the song, Justin?
No Quarter?
Yeah. There's a stick click at the end.
Is it really?
Yes. Zeppelin fans rejoice. John Bonham made a mistake once.
Chris had a beautiful marriage.
Yeah.
What?
You walk into the reception hall and there's pictures of family members that are no longer with us. And who is right in the center of all the family?
Slightly to the left. Yeah. John Bonham. I wish he was there. That's all.
Fantastic. And I lost my fucking question again. You'll have to forgive me. I've been battling something for the past 24 hours. So
you guys played, you went out with Cheap Trick.
Yes,
we did.
Knowing the music that you love and you know, who they are. I mean, that had to be, I'm guessing, just an amazing experience.
The whole like celebrity shock or whatever it's called went away so quickly because we walked into the first venue and Rick Nielsen's just like, who the fuck are you? And that was the whole like, oh, it's, you know, they're people too, right? And everything it all came crashing down, and quickly realized that they were friendly and really nice to work with and easy.
Yeah, it was great.
One time he let me play his, Rick let me play his 59 Les Paul on stage, which was really cool.
Wow.
On stage, no less.
Yes. He let me play a show with it, but, I use those little rubber stoppers over the straps. I was playing the first song and they both popped off. And I think within the middle of the second song, I took it off. I'm like, not dropping this. It's worth more than the house I'm renting. So
yeah, right.
A Gibson nonetheless, where the headstock could crack off if you breathe on it wrong.
One of my most important duties is to make appointments with the president. Takes judgment to tell which caller should be given 15 minutes and which one should take his problems to someone else in the firm. Sometimes it takes every ounce of tact I can muster to keep everyone contented.
How long did the album take to record? What was that process like for you guys?
Well, if we joined in 2017, was it, Justin?
I think it was 2018. Chris and I played our first show together with the guys. They were together a little bit before us.
Our first gig was December
28th.
28th, yeah. Was it 2017? Then 2018 was the first full year.
Might be what it was, yeah.
Some of it was done, but I mean, I think we worked on it for a solid year, at least up until January of 2020. And then the Bloodshot rushed to release it, which was kind of them. Smash Plastic, the people that made the vinyl record, rushed it as well. We thank them for that.
Sadly, it came out in March.
Just yeah.
It's the yeah. time I'm putting a record out on Friday the 13th. March 13th, 2020.
And just as the world collapsed.
Yes.
There's this picture of Dimitri consoling me on the side of a gas station on a curb, sitting on a curb, that I need to get framed because it just encapsulates how it was feeling. I mean, so much worse things to say, but I mean, COVID did kick our ass.
It sure did. I mean, everyone, especially so much has been written and spoken about the younger bands coming up who just got walloped by it.
And everyone was saying like, what's going to change and these new normals. And I mean, I don't want to sound like an idiot, but I was like, I'm not sure what's going to change really. You know, we're all a band of brothers, et cetera. And, you know, not three of the guys are gone. Because you can't just sit around and sit on your hands and say, I'm in a rock band waiting for a pandemic, you know, or this is my career. I mean, it really changed everything. It really changed everything.
Yeah, you guys were doing some clever stuff on your website, and I'd contacted you about covering the replacement Skyway for me so I could give it to a friend of mine. And you were kind enough to do that. I don't remember who did that, whether it was Max or whether it was you, Chris.
I did it, yeah.
That was great. I fucking loved it. And I love the fact that you did that. You're like, all right, we're a band. We're going to throw this out there and see what people will do.
I have to say I got the idea from another band. Everyone says how much they love their replacements, and I wanted to get on that train. So that helped me push out into the water and explore their stuff. It was thank you for helping me learn a little bit more about, you know, the world around me by asking me to do that.
They're a great band. I'm trying to get a through line through every episode to at least mention the Replacements. Sure. So there you go. Name check to the Replacements. Yeah, that's done.
There we go.
And Keith, you managed to get into a Replacements discussion again. A lot of people were either on the Replacements side of things or you were a fan of the Pixies, and the two never really meshed. But we had Vaden Todd Lewis from the Toadies on. He is a Pixies guy.
There are two sides to that camp.
I've been a fan of both for a long time, so I don't subscribe to either side. You can be a fan of both bands regardless.
Yeah, you got to pick sides, man.
No, you can't.
In Chicago, you got to pick sides.
Exactly. Thank you. I'm with you 100%, Chris. You got to pick a side. You got to stick with it.
Replacements okay. All the way.
There you go. That's it.
No to the Pixies from Chris. All right.
Big no.
Big no. Okay.
Justin's like still on the fence. He's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Capricorn Records was this record label out of Macon, Georgia, part of that Southern rock sound from the 70s. And the guy who ran it was a guy named Phil Walden. And every year he would have this big barbecue with all the label guys would come, and a couple bands would play. And I said, your sound, if I went back into like the mid 70s, I could see you guys playing Phil Walden's barbecue in Macon, Georgia, because it's that type of sound.
Yes.
So my question is, what did you guys listen to growing up?
Zeppelin. But we all listened to Zeppelin. I kind of strayed off a little bit after that into more Grateful Dead type scene. Allman Brothers, I love. That's what I got interested in. But I think that Zeppelin would be at the center of the Venn diagram for all of us, right, Chris?
Yeah. My mom showed me Ben Folds 5 and when I was really little, and I went insane for that. I think that was my first true love. I was liking bands like Motion City Soundtrack at the same time. I was loving Led Zeppelin, but I'd like all sorts of stuff. Really eclectic taste. We all consider ourselves eclectic when we have, you know, a country record on our shelf and, you know, a heavy metal one. But I think, like, if you're listening to, you know, 2000s pop and all the classic rock bands, that's way stranger.
It's hard to grow up listening to just one thing if you're going to ever expand, right? But it's easy to fall into that trap. Like when I was a kid, you know, you were into metal or, you know, kind of rock and roll, maybe like old school rock and roll or pop music. Like you couldn't really deviate. But the first three bands I saw live in my life, I was 11 or 12 years old, and I saw all three of these bands in the same year. Iron Maiden, Duran Duran, and Prince.
Yeah.
There you go.
What the hell is that? But that's exactly what you two are talking about. Like that diversity is probably, you know, one of the reasons you guys sound the way you do, which is refreshing, actually.
I think that's the core of your sound. And what makes it cool to me is that you're influenced directly from the source. I'm using hand gestures for no reason because it's a podcast. But you know, you're going right to the source rather than that middle ground where it could be you're influenced by Queens of the Stone Age, which is not to say that you're not influenced by them. But to hear you guys talk, you're talking about the original. And that comes through in your music for me. I hear that. So kudos.
We had one that I kind of know personally from high school say that we're classic rock revival. And I don't but our best guess in the van when we're having fun would be that it means that we love the Black Crowes and hate Zeppelin. We put Buck Cherry on in the van kind of to hype us up after maybe we're tired after a show to drive back to the hotel or the Airbnb that we're staying at.
You know what? I'm glad you brought that up, Justin, because that's a really interesting question I have. How has Airbnb influenced the tour thing for you guys? Because I think if it's me, I would rather stay in a house than a hotel, even if it's only for a few hours.
I booked the trip right before COVID. But this is probably the greatest silver lining the COVID offered any of us in Rookie, at least. And we had to cancel it. Airbnb canceled it. The host did because of COVID.
Sure.
And I got all the credits back plus some. And we've been very fortunate to cash in on that on the road a couple of times now.
Great.
Did you talk about the camping, Justin?
No, but we did a lot of camping this tour, too.
Yeah, we camped well over half the tour.
Hmm.
It was great.
Really? I'm not a camping guy is a hotel for me. I'm not a camp guy.
That's what a lot of people say.
But I would imagine being a tour manager and booking campgrounds is can't be. I mean, if you're playing a bunch of cities, it's like, all right, well, we got to go off this path and go to this campground.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work?
Tour managers aren't allowed. We don't want
them. Yeah, tour managers a lot. We do. Got all that in-house.
So do you guys run everything? Like, are you kind of self-sufficient that way outside of the label? Like, is it just you and just the band?
No label anymore.
Wait, what?
Bloodshot Records does not exist anymore. That was another casualty of COVID.
Hold on.
I didn't know that.
Bloodshot Records is no more?
This would be over a year for it, right, Chris?
Yeah. I don't know how public they've been about anything, but it's definitely done.
Wow.
And I don't think that's restricted information. It's definitely not. But, yeah, it went belly up and it went fast and hard. I mean,
Wow.
Yeah, just.
That's a shame. I thought.
Yeah, Rob sent us an email that's like, my hands are clean and I'm out. And that was it.
It's really not all that surprising, really, if you consider what happened and is still happening in the music industry now, you know, because of COVID and since every, I mean, there's just a ton of wreckage from that.
I don't want to get on a Bloodshot thing, but they had such a great niche. They were this great label that did, you know, roots rock, Americana, stuff that wasn't really being serviced by majors.
The people that we worked with over there were fantastic to us. That's something I can say. The people that we had the closest to us were great.
Yeah, that's good to know. I mean, so many bands that we've talked to as well. And again, this is why, you know, it's very cool to be able to talk to different people so often. You know, their experiences with their labels were usually pretty horrific. And that was usually long before anything like COVID had ever happened. So it's nice to hear that you guys had at least a good relationship with the people that you worked with.
Look who's talking. Why, someone ought to take you across his knee and give you a good spanking.
Maybe you're the one to do it.
So it's the band that's doing everything, like you guys are just doing everything on your own at this point then?
We are up to some big stuff, but we cannot say. We have a bit of an NDA going, but I think you'll be pretty stoked to see what's up.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think some exciting stuff is in the pipe.
And then you play the Bowery Electric.
Yeah, quite the experience.
I'm in New York, yeah, and I that place is a pretty interesting spot, too. So what was that like?
Well, our organ caught on fire, so we didn't have to bring that down that flight of stairs.
Okay.
Then we get, and then, you know, we bring some stuff down there, and we're like, this stage is, you know, it's just us and Local H, but Scott of Local H plays with a pretty big rig. And that stage is so small, we're like, we got to just share gear tonight. It was a sold out show. It was a lot of fun. The bar back treated us like kings, and we were in like this cool little I guess you could call it a coke dungeon, like this weird back room, and the show was awesome, and they're like, get the hell out of here. We're like, okay. And they're like, yeah, the DJ starts and you're not going to want to be down here.
Yeah.
And I think within 5 minutes, there was people swarming everywhere, and we're trying to carry a Rhodes piano up the flight of stairs around these, you know, club heads, and someone's got to go get the van, so we're standing there with all of our gear in the street. I mean, that's typical New York stuff, but yeah, it was interesting how quickly it went from a rock show to absolute madness where people can't feel their jaws and bunch of bullshit. People are taking their hats off of our heads and pushing us, and we're hitting people's drinks and they're getting pissed. It was a near disaster.
Yeah. that's very, very true of that place. It changes in an instant, and it goes from a very cool vibe to a very awful one.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get out of there too, because you're going up that flight of stairs. And right. And then yeah, it's a total mess. I've been there before, not lugging any gear or anything, but just trying to get the hell out. And yeah, it's not fun. So,
well, next time you can help us carry the B3 organ up the stairs.
That's one of the really interesting sounds that you use, which is very cool. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But a bitch to get up and down. I know.
Yeah. I did.
So worth it, though.
Absolutely. The sound is fucking awesome. I love that.
Let's pump the brakes here. I think I heard something about an organ on fire.
The van broke on in between Jacksonville, Florida and Charlotte, North Carolina. And we hurried and ran the minivan and brought the bare essentials and left the trailer in Orangeburg, South Carolina, and left the organ there. And then after the Charlotte, we drove back to South Carolina to go up to Connecticut. And that was the first gig. What do you think it was, 5 days, Chris, probably?
Yeah, so we're so stoked to have it.
So we cracked the organ out, got it on stage, and we got, there was crazy traffic getting to that Connecticut show. So we're hurrying to a sound check, and we get the organ all loaded up on stage, and it's not functioning. And I can say these words were only spoken one time on tour. My organ's burning.
Thank God it was only one time.
Yeah, yeah.
Every rock band needs to go on tour and someone needs to say, my organ's burning, and I'm concerned.
Which one would be the question that comes back? That's such a Spinal Tap thing to hear and have happened. You know, I mean, it's not the drums, but to have an organ just burst into flames, in essence.
It smoked like, oh, for sure.
Thankfully, the world's greatest organ tech lives here in Chicago, so it's in good hands, and it'll be back. Rookie fans, rest assured.
How old is this organ? What is it?
It's hard to pinpoint exactly when it's from, but the interesting story that this organ holds is that it belonged to Rick Danko, the bass player of the band.
Get the fuck out!
Yeah.
Wow.
That.
Oh, it's insane.
I'm in a little bit of awe here. I'm getting a little choked. I'm a little verklempt at the moment. How did you land that? That's a good get.
I grew up on the southwest side of Chicago. I'm actually at my folks' place right now. And one town over, I was just kind of trolling the internet for organ, or just for equipment. I wasn't even looking to buy anything, just seeing what's out there. And just right down the road, someone was redoing their basement and this organ sitting down there. I went over the Price is Right and I purchased it, and it was all the way loaded into the trailer before he mentioned, because he thought I was too young to know who the band was. He was managing a group that Rick Danko was in after the band, and then it fell into his hands and played around Chicago for a while, and then it wound up with me.
What was the name of that group?
Bennett Brothers.
Bennett Brothers.
Before you guys got on the call, Robert asked me what I thought you guys sounded like, and now that you mention Rick Danko, that's the connection, the band. I mean, I had mentioned, when he said it, I had mentioned Southern Rock, the Allman Brothers, but now that you mention that, that's the connection. So it's safe to presume that you guys are fans of the band.
Huge.
Yeah, big time.
Chris, you mentioned that you're working on things that you cannot disclose currently, but is there anything you can talk, anything you can say, maybe the sound or direction of what's next without giving anything away?
Well, I guess why I'm so happy to hear about the band compliment is because if there was just elements of all these elements of 70s music and people were always trying to put this power pop thing on us, and you know, we made the mistake of kind of misguiding people a little bit. That's what we do. I think it is closer to singer-songwriter Americana,
okay,
kind of stuff. And we are definitely heading in a direction where there's still rock songs and there's still stuff like that, but it's not as, I think we're dropping some of the cockier elements and the more, you know, macho bullshit is kind of going away, and we're getting down to our roots, and you know, hopefully, you know, we're setting up on a dirt floor and playing our music, you know, in some open air barn or something like that. We're looking for a vibe that's a little bit more down to earth, a little more rootsy, definitely rock and roll.
I hear that there's some places up in Woodstock that are like that.
Yeah, we're not going to old man Levon's house.
I was reading through the now defunct Bloodshot Records press kit, and they mentioned Thin Lizzy. Where, I mean, no offense, with all due respect, I don't hear anything. I like Thin Lizzy, and I'm not a Thin Lizzy scholar by any stretch, but I was like, I don't hear any Thin Lizzy, you know?
I would agree.
Okay.
But maybe the connection is I'll play Irish music with a dance company, and there's a band there as well, so I don't know where it comes from, but
Cheap Trick, all right, I got that. And you know, The Big Star, okay, I get that. And I got all those connections. But Thin Lizzy, I'm like, no, I don't hear that.
I like them.
Of course. Yeah, you can't. Yeah, you know.
They're like the second great Irish rock.
That was good. That's a good one.
No, my other bandmates in the other group absolutely adore them, and I love them too. It's apples to oranges with the U2. That's yeah, a good one. Or do we need to pick sides?
What was it now? Say it again.
Do we need to pick sides? Is it Thin Lizzy or U2? You can't.
Yeah, this is Pixies and The Replacements all over again.
All right. Well, you know what? I'm going to have to go U2 on this one only because I don't know enough about Thin Lizzy, and I haven't explored the catalog. I grew up on U2. So that they were my band coming of age. Thin Lizzy's a little bit before my time. So my only point of reference is really Jailbreak and The Boys Are Back in Town.
Yeah.
So by default.
By default, same for me.
That's a cop out. If you're making me draw a line, I'm gonna go U2. I'm gonna go hard on U2.
No, but here's what's interesting about that question, because we keep talking about, you know, generations and what people listen to, what they grow up with, and they're based on their age. And Keith is right. You know, in the early 80s, you know, U2 was massive. Like, you couldn't get away from them, and Thin Lizzy was done. But for two of my favorite bands ever were Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin. And still to this day, they are, like, all these years later. So there are some bands that actually stay with you forever. But with you guys, that's one of the things I think that makes you so unique. You know, Keith said you go back to the source, but you still have influences and the love of other music as well. And it creates, it helps create the sound that you guys make, which you don't hear a lot today. And that's
Rob, you're walking the line again. What's it going to be? Thin Lizzy or U2?
Thank you.
No, I said in the beginning, I said U2 in the beginning.
Okay. So I'm the only Thin Lizzy guy, and I'll tell you, and I will refer you guys to Vagabonds of the Western World. There we go.
We love them hot, hot shots, those brand new hot, hot shots. It's a firecracker treat that's fun to eat. You'll get a bang and a hot shot.
We are opening for John Fogerty in a couple weeks, and it's going to be a dream come true.
Fuck yeah.
Where is that going to be?
That's at Ravinia.
When you play in front of Fogerty and if you get to talk to him and meet him, like, is that something that you could have, I mean, you probably never dreamed of it, but now that it's happening and you know what's happening, is that exciting to the point of like, yeah, let's just go kick ass, let's just do this, or is there any sort of trepidation there?
No, it is absolutely, let's rip and let's have as much fun as we can, because this is hands down going to be the greatest experience. It can't be any other way. We can't allow it to be.
Awesome.
You know, if guitar strings bust and microphones break and organs catch fire, that's out of our control, you know, and that won't drag us down. We'll just do what we can. This is going to go great. Hands down.
Awesome. Yeah. That's, and what's the date again on that show?
July 8th, right?
Yep.
July 8th. Okay.
Guys, I'm sorry, I gotta get off. I got a rehearsal.
Cool. Well, thank you, Justin.
Yeah, I really appreciate you having us on.
Yeah, no, of course.
100%, anytime.
Yeah. No worries.
Thank you.
Chris, don't go anywhere. I got a question for you.
All right, okay. I'll talk to you guys later. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin.
Thanks, Justin. Take care. So, Chris, I have two questions. The first question is, who is Rookie now?
Rookie now is myself, Joe, the drummer, Justin, the keys. Those are the original members. And then there's Barrett, who has been around since the beginning recording the band. He's playing the bass. And then there's this kid, Giovanni Vincenzo Morari, who is playing some lead guitar.
So you got a Jewish guy in there.
Yeah, he's fresh off the boat. Yeah.
He must be from New York or Chicago with a name like that.
Yeah, he's from the Bridgeport neighborhood of Chicago. I think he's first gen. I think the whole band has Italian heritage except for Justin, which is pretty funny. And he doesn't know when he says, "Oh, I'm not hungry," when he comes into my house. He doesn't know how much that hurts my feelings.
The only response is, "I could eat."
Yeah, you're hungry no matter what.
Yeah, come on, just a ham sandwich. My wife thinks I'm crazy. You get home after a gig or something and you're chopping garlic and making some sort of Florentine or something. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm just making something easy.
Gonna whip up a little pesto.
For those that can't see this and won't see it, you're wearing a Chicago. Is that?
I am wearing a Chicago shirt.
Are you a fan of Chicago? The band Chicago Transit Authority?
I am a mega fan. My cousin's uncle is Lee Lachman, the trumpet player in the band. So that's always been one of the childhood bands too. I guess I forgot to mention that, is that that music was always around because my cousins, even though they're not big rock and roll heads, I mean, Chicago is the greatest band in the world to them because, you know, their uncle's up on that stage doing that. So eventually time passes and I discover Terry Kath. And,
there you go.
You know, Dimitri introduces me to the whole universe of Chicago. And now, you know, him and I both have Night Amplifiers, and we're playing the same rig as him every once in a while.
Yeah, I think Chicago gets a shitty rap. You know, I think because those first few records are fucking incredible. They're great rock records.
Oh, yeah.
There is a quote, and I think it's in the documentary, and the name escapes me right now, but you'd enjoy it if you like Terry Kath. It is alleged that Jimi Hendrix said, I wish I could play guitar as good as Terry Kath does.
Is the name of this documentary Color My World?
It might be. That sounds vaguely familiar. You know, Chris, tell us a little bit about how your cover of Head Over Heels by Tears for Fears came to be.
That was one of the first things I actually did with the band. I have a half inch 8-track tape machine here, and at the time I had just this little Foss or Tascam M200 series console, like just a cheap little one, and I'm like, you guys got to come here and do something. And I didn't know him too well. When the sessions ended, it was two days straight, and I look on top, or like in between the tape machine and the console, and there was like $300 there I'd left there on accident, so they had my trust immediately.
Wow, that's nice. Chris, thank you so much for joining the call. I'm glad you're able to join.
Thank you, guys. It was really nice to meet you both.
Nice to meet you as well. And if I didn't say it, I'm going to say it now. And I'm not blowing smoke up your ass. To my ears, you're the most authentic rock band that I've heard in a long time.
I appreciate that. We're just on the quest to fulfill our creative needs and communicate to other people.
Keith doesn't say shit like that, Chris. He never does. Keith, he's usually telling me I'm a little bit too much into the music, and Keith is a little bit more, you know, level-headed, I guess. So for him to say that, that's absolutely, you know.
I appreciate that, Keith.
As far as music goes, and I said this a couple of times already, but I'll say it again, it is authentic and it is interesting and it is, it comes from the heart. There's no other way your music can sound the way it does. Because if you were trying to create something specific, it would almost be false, if that makes sense.
Yes.
And it doesn't, yeah, and it does not come off that way. Like, it's legitimately, when you guys get in the room, that's what comes out, and it comes across on the recording. So I love the fact that it has that sound, and it's 2022, and nobody else is really sounding like that, because it's real. You know, I don't know what else you can ask for from a band, except, you know, honesty.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Rob. We are trying. We're trying. We'll always try, no matter what.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, fellas. Wait, I don't know how to leave. Oh, there we go. See ya.
Take care, man. Many thanks to Justin and Chris and the rest of the guys at Rookie. The songs you heard during this podcast were Introduction to, Sunglasses, One Way Ticket, and Let's Get It Right. Those songs can be found on Rookie's debut album, which is available to stream wherever you stream your favorite music. The song Head Over Heels is a Tears for Fears cover, which can also be streamed wherever you stream your favorite music. Abandoned Albums was recorded at Thunder Love Studios.
Produced and written by Keith R. Higgins and Rob Janicki.
Engineered and mixed by Steve Beasley. Edited by A.J. Royce.
Original music by Mike Pellegrino. If you like what you've heard, be sure to subscribe and follow us on social media. At Twitter, we are at Abandoned Albums, and on Instagram, we are at Abandoned_Albums.
As always, thanks to Rob Janicki, S.W. Loudon, Nathan Sage, Steve Beasley, Mike Pellegrino, Therina Bella, Peyton and Michael Janicki, and of course, our executive producer,
Rufus Thunderwolf.
And now, until we meet again next time, I remain as always obediently yours.
Abandoned Albums is a production of Pawprint Media.